The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week, Louis Patterson finds out from John Fox and Zeno and Oaklander why analog synths are all the rage. We'll be talking about tracks by Drake and Rihanna, ASAP or rather ASAP Rocky, and Factory Floor. And as the London Jazz Festival begins this weekend, John Fordham has his recommendations on what to check out, and we find out what you need to know about what's going on in the world of jazz. That's all in this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello to you, and welcome to the studio, Rebecca Nicholson. Hello.
Hi.
And Mr. Tim Jones. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
You're both looking substantially, he says, sounding like your dad. You're both looking substantially the worse for wear. What have you been doing? Why do you look the way you do? I mean, hungover, I don't mean just generally.
Who wants to go first?
Is this even professional? This is a weekday.
I think you're allowed. It's rock and roll, baby.
Yeah,
Iggy Pop stood there in like 1969.
Well, it's a Wednesday, so I don't think I will.
Trying to find a vein in the toilet, going in high school to school night. Tim, let's start with you. Where were you last night?
I like the comparison to Iggy Pop.
You remind me. Of.
I was at the AIM Independent Music Awards, of which I was a judge.
Wow, who won?
Lawrence Bell won an award for Iggy Pioneer.
Okay, that's good. That's excellent.
Subtract won an award. The main prize, I thought, was the only drink they served seemed to be neat rum with no ice or mixer.
Wow.
So that's all you had to
do. Wow.
So we went through a lot of that. Yeah.
Wow, Rebecca, you were hanging out with the stars last night, huh?
I went to see St. Vincent at the Royal Festival Hall, which was very good, and there was red wine. Involved.
Wow.
In that. So, yes.
Brilliant. Well, that's it's a great anecdote.
I'm full of them. I've got loads. This morning, I got up.
Well, look, thank you both for coming in. We'll be listening to your singles club choices a bit later on. But first, The Maths, the band John Fox, formerly of Ultravox, is currently pouring his talents into, has just completed a UK tour, and the gear he used while playing live was all vintage analog kit. He was supported by a group called Zeno and Oaklander, a sharp Brooklyn group, proper scholars of analog synth pop. This all happening at the same time as Mute Records. They're about to release the Dirty Electronics Mute Synth, a specially created handheld analog instrument controlled by the conductivity of the body, which completes the circuit when it is touched. And when artists including Mark Ronson, LCD Sound System, and new electronic act Ford and Lopatin are hunting out old synths, sending the price for vintage kit on eBay through the roof, and Rough Trade East actually have a big analog synthesizer in the shop that you can hire by the hour. Amazing.
How much? For an
hour? I don't know. Oh. I've no interest in doing it myself. But, you know, people have, and that's great. Why are people fetishizing this old gear? What can it do the digital stuff cannot? Louis Patterson went to meet John Fox and Zeno and Oaklander and asked John Fox what his first experience with synthesizers was.
Well, the very first one was, it goes back a long way actually, in the 60s. A friend of mine built a theremin from a transistor radio with an aerial that you could use to make noises with, and pitch with, in other words. And it was in the magazine, it was either a musical instrument or a burglar alarm. And you could put it on a windowsill in case the burglar came in through the window and then it would screech.
It's very multi-purpose.
It was a very handy device, yeah. But I was fascinated by that because I think the thing I liked about it was there wasn't any keyboard or anything, and it was all to do with electrical fields and proximity. And I found that really exciting. It was like science fiction. And it was partly magical as well because you felt it shouldn't really work.
Okay, a question for Sean and Liz then. I mean, I'm curious to hear about when you sort of started, you know, finding and tracking down what sort of fairly vintage equipment, and what is the appeal of this technology for you?
For me, it was in the analog, with capital A, would have been University Electronic Music Laboratory. The University of Massachusetts has had this electronic music lab, and there were these modular synthesizers. At the time, I hadn't any, you know, I hadn't been acquainted with this at all. So seeing diagrams and schemas printed on the faceplate of these things was like science fiction in a way. But then, you know, figuring out how to patch it and hearing these sounds was I could never go back, and I was hooked. And now I have much of that same equipment that we work with, and so yeah, there's a kind of fidelity to that original experience of seeing that.
For me, I was in a garage punk band, and we gleaned a synth, a Korg, an old Korg, off the street. Hmm. Or maybe a friend of ours gave it to us, and I was back in the day when synths were not, you know, interesting in the indie music scene or whatever. So I tried it at home, and it was a really ancient, dusty, moldy, and it actually caught fire. There was smoke coming out of it, and I thought it was quite amazing sounding as it was in flames.
So in the band that you play in together, Zeno and Oaklander, then you use sort of exclusively vintage technology, is that correct?
Yeah, although it's not about it being old, it's just that this kind of thing isn't being made these days. Although there are more and more boutique companies, and not even companies, but boutique makers and manufacturers that are starting to emerge that are doing this, but actually quite a lot of them. But yeah, I mean, just the old Roland and ARP, and in and of itself, it's this kind of complete instrument, like any other instrument, like a guitar or a violin or something. It can't be updated. It is kind of finite.
It's like a Georgian house. It's reached a stage of evolution where it's perfect, and all you can do is maybe make it slightly more efficient, or decorate it in a modern manner.
Yeah.
But after that, architecture changed completely, and there was steel and glass and other materials involved, so you have buildings like this. But we still love those houses because they have a kind of airy perfection that can't be replicated anymore, or it could be, but it would be a pastiche. So there's a moment that you can enjoy and relish.
There's also the live concerts aspects, when the music is played live on stage. That's also, it's this immediacy that's really important about the way that we handle the instruments.
I think you do that beautifully too, I have to say. You do it better than we do, because it's much purer what you do, because it's all like that. All your stage music is like that, and it's lovely to hear it. Much more courageous than we are, because we still use elements of what we do that are recorded from the tape, because we can't reproduce it live.
It's a nice thought that you can learn from the new guys.
Oh, yeah, I've got great respect for it. It was astounding to hear when you played live. I really enjoyed it.
John Fox and Zeno and Oaklander with Louis there, and you can find out more information about that mute synth at dirtyelectronics, or one word, .org. Now, Tim Jones and Rebecca Nicholson, as we said before, are here to keep me company. What a surprise! They've brought along the favourite tracks that they've heard this week. Shall we listen to them? Let's start with Rebecca's choice. You won't ever have to hide, and you'll see all my mistakes, so look me in my eyes. Take care of you. All right, that's Drake and Rihanna and Take Care. A weirdly familiar song. Why is it weirdly familiar?
It's familiar because I believe it's essentially I'll Take Care of You off the Jamie XX Gil Scott Heron album. Uh-huh. But with the added bonus of Rihanna and Drake.
So how has this come about? Where did you come across it?
It's off his new album. It's been leaking slowly this week. It's on the internet.
Wow, I've been leaking slowly this week. I like that. Nice. I love... I'm not sure how much of what I love about it has to do with Rihanna and Drake and how much has to do... I really like that warped, very old-school kind of Chicago-y house mm-hmm. production that JBXX did on that original track.
It's basically the same song, but with, you know, some emo rap over the top. But what I like about it... I love the original song, I like this as well. But what I like about it is Rihanna's voice, which is usually quite... abrasive, and you know, I appreciate that. I think it's a thing. I like it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But on this, it's kind of slightly lower. It's a bit breathier, mm-hmm. And I think it really works. He needs to cheer up. He needs to get over it. Honestly,
is his whole album like this?
Well, I imagine so. That's his whole. That's his thing, isn't it? Oh, I'm really sad, girls.
Yeah, Nick Drake.
I loved his first album.
Did you?
Absolutely loved it. It was my favourite album of the year. And I like the fact that he needed to cheer up. But I know what you mean. It's like, because I've been reading about this album. I've heard a few tracks off it. And I like this. It's a great single. And I love Rihanna's bit, like you said. And actually, Drake's bit's probably the worst bit of the record. Yeah. But I've been reading about this album. And he's describing it as his post-fame album. But that's what his first record
was, wasn't it?
And also, there's an element of when someone describes, anyone describes a record as their post-fame record, your spirits start to sink a little bit.
Yeah, and what was great about his first one was that he was doing it, and he was like, well, dude, you've not really been famous yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Soul, famously, Mr. Soul by the Buffalo Springfield, written by Neil Young, which is a song about how terrible it is, and the fans are tearing us apart, and I'm written in, like, 1965 or something like that. Neil Young, not a sniff of fame when he wrote that song.
Not really.
That's
quite
very Jesse
slogan.
J, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not very Jesse J of Neil Young.
Jesse J.
I was going to say, what an amazing equation.
Carrying on the flame of Neil Young.
So that's available on the internet if you search about. Is
yes,
it? Yes,
yeah.
Right, okay. And his album is, I believe, out on Monday anyway, I think.
Yeah, he's taking his time with it. But yeah. I think it is finally coming out.
Wow. Well, if you've been holding your breath waiting for Drake's album, it is out on Monday. The next track is my choice. November the 14th on the excellent label DFA. That's Factory Floor in Two Different Ways. Last week we had Chris and Cozy from Throbbing Gristle in on the podcast, and they were suggesting that Factory Floor were a band that were imbued a bit with the spirit. I think Chris has worked with them, and they were sort of a band that were a bit imbued with the spirit of Throbbing Gristle. Then this sort of turned up just after they'd said that, and I just think it's a really interesting record because on one level it's just a sort of great acid track, it's just a great acid house track, but it's got this incredibly gloomy, mournful vocal attached, sort of post-punky kind of vocal attached to it that I think sort of works really well and suddenly makes acid tracks I tend to find quite warm and enveloping and inviting, suddenly makes it sound quite cold and remote, but it's also really funky and you could dance to it, and I just thought it ticked pretty much every box for me. Tim?
I've always found acid tracks to actually make me quite nervous. It's almost that sense of anticipation. I almost find it quite unsettling. It makes my stomach turn when I hear it because it's like, reminds me of queuing up outside a kind of dingy sweatbox rave and hearing, you can almost hear it inside.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're full of excitement but also like a bit of the fear. and I just thought that was really good at kind of whipping up that emotion. It's almost quite shamelessly retro in a weird way, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, I don't know, I thought it was very intricate, all the different, if you actually, you could lose yourself in it without wanting to sound too much like a hippie, but you could, you know, properly put your headphones on.
Put your headphones on. Works in both ways. Would work on the dance floor, would work at home.
This is what they said in the marketing meeting when they put it on.
DFA Records marketing, imagine that.
Yeah.
Rebecca, yes. Did you like it?
I enjoyed it. Normally, I think songs should be 2 minutes, 30 seconds maximum.
Wow.
This is long. This is 8 minutes and something. I was enjoying the whole thing. I've enjoyed it several times.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So that's, you know.
It's not normally what you'd listen to with a hangover, is it? It's
well, I did. Yeah, I did have to force it a bit this morning.
I think DFA as a label, which I think is one of the reasons why LCD Sound System stopped, was James Murphy wanted to concentrate on this sort of other side of DFA, which is just putting out these kind of one-off, you know, 12-inch singles. And I think they're consistently a really, really brilliant label. I find they're just a really intriguing sweep of different kind of dance music they put out, and it's all really good. And I'm really pleased that they've signed up Factory Floor, and I hope they do more work with them. That's out on November the 14th. Our last track is Tim's Choice. My old gold grills give her cold chills. Says she got a coke feel, cause I'm so trill. Two dope boys scale, but I sold pills. No deal, put her on her feet, toenails. I'm vampires, I'm bloodsuckers, I'm thirsty killers. We bout it, we routed, that Percy Miller. No really real, we chillin' chill, no scorchin' chiller. My bounty hunter's a bounty killer, I'm bout my Skrilla. Give me the title, then give me the cash. Put it in back and I'm up to the trap. Pullin' my stash, shillin' my swag. Niggas is wicked and wicked. That's ASAP Rocky and Palace. That's Tim's Choice. Wait, Tim, tell us about ASAP Rocky.
It's ASAP Rocky.
Oh, this is Wretch 3-2 all over
it
again.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, he's just signed a $3 million record deal in the States, which is kind of crazy. The recession is over, everyone. I mean, I've been writing this column at the moment for The Guide where I look at a new, different genre every month. Mm-hmm. And then I've been doing hip-hop this month and I've been kind of really obsessed with this guy, who is from Harlem. He's just very charismatic, and his whole thing's very... He's a New York rapper, but he sounds very influenced by, you know, DJ Screw and the Houston, Texas side of hip-hop. And what I love about this is very grand kind of, you know, it's the opening song on his new mixtape that he's just put online. Mm-hmm. So it's a really grand kind of opening. But I love the beat, which Clams Casino's done. I don't know if you know Clams Casino, but he's an amazing producer.
Right, okay.
And he's done... He's released instrumentals, he's done stuff for Little B, and he's done stuff for Triangle, the Witch House label.
So oh, right, okay, interesting spread of stuff, yeah.
And they're always kind of slightly new agey and kind of wispy and cloudy, but also quite emotionally moving. It's quite weird to have, I mean, Little B kind of ruins some of his tracks, I think, when he raps over them. But I think Rocky's quite a good pairing.
It sounded very epic. It sounded very, really epic, you know, it sounded intriguing. It reminded me in a weird way of certain stuff that's coming out of New York in the kind of early 90s, the more kind of grandiose side of what the Wu-Tang Clan did rather than the grimy side of it. You know what I mean?
Like the more strings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it had that kind of dark, you know, grandeur about it. I liked it enormously. I think it's a really good record. I'm intrigued to see what ASAP Rocky does to earn his $3 million in future. Rebecca?
Well, it's kind of like all that Watch the Throne stuff, but with taste. Someone's done it tastefully, because Watch the Throne is just everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Chucked in. And this is
Watch my lovely understated throne.
It's more like a chair.
Watch my IKEA chair.
A desk chair, IKEA.
Watch the Throne, I've painted it in Clunch by Farrow and Ball. That's great. So that's out, is it? Online? Is that available to download
for
nothing?
There is the Live Love ASAP mixtape, which you can
love
find.
ASAP mixtape. Okay, online. Brilliant. Well, look, some comments from last week's programme. Last week, commenter Dave Portivo joined the pod to review tracks, and there were comments that he was too well-behaved. He even posted a guide to being a panellist on the programme, which consisted of 1. Throw more cats. 2. Interfere with pigeons. Not strictly legal, I don't think, doing that. 3. Be less informed. 4. Career change. Change career, rather. And 5. Pick a more masculine song. Elsewhere, Pop Bijou wondered if we should have played Cher Lloyd's single instead of Russo's, as she thought we talked about the X Factor star more. Interesting. There's a lot of love for Throbbing Gristle, too. Leave a comment on the blog about this week's programme. The site is guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Now, this weekend sees the start of the 2011 London Jazz Festival. In a moment, The Guardian's jazz critic John Fordham will be picking his highlights from this year's lineup. But first, regular listeners will be aware we've been running a series where experts in a particular field of music give us a handy guide to the music in that field that's been floating their boat. This week, we've asked someone from the jazz world to come up with the goods.
Hello, my name's Jason Phipps, and it's my great pleasure indeed to present, well, what I think is London's best jazz programme. It's called Jazz by Association, and it goes out on French Radio London, which is on DAB and online. The show is a weekly hour-long exploration of the best in contemporary jazz and improvised music from France and beyond. And I focus on that spectrum of jazz that more often than not pushes at the boundaries of what I think most people would call jazz. But regardless of definitions or boxes, I think has its roots in jazz and its original American incarnation, and also has its roots in a rich seam of European jazz. And I suppose as the wonderful London Jazz Festival combusts around us, this is a form of music that I think everyone agrees is in pretty rude health. It seems to me to be perhaps maybe a golden era in contemporary jazz. So with that in mind, I've picked a few Jazz by Association favourites for you. My first choice is one of those musicians, I suppose, who challenged the conventional notion of what is or isn't jazz. He's a US musician. He was born in Michigan, but he's based in Montreal now. His name is Colin Stetson, and he's based in Montreal because I think, well, he's part of the sort of Montreal scene, music scene there, but his day job is more often than not as one of Arcade Fire. However, he's played as a session musician, as a backing musician, most formatively for Tom Waits from around 2000. He released an album this year called New History Warfare Volume 2 Judges on a kind of radical Constellation Records out of Montreal. Stetson's instrument is the beast of the saxophone world, the bass saxophone. The record is made up substantively of a series of solo pieces, and these solo performances are played using no loops or overdubs. He simply has mic'd up his instrument so that you begin to hear all the different sort of sounds and elements of the instrument as he plays it. He's also a phenomenally skilled player, so he's using an unbelievable lung capacity to generate all sorts of resonance in the instrument. Also, he's using circular breathing, which is difficult on a tenor saxophone, but is an extraordinary feat on an instrument of this size. All this adds to an amazing kind of cinematic sound. It's a haunting record, an extraordinary record. This is the title track called Judges, and it's an album I think that everyone should go out and get. Moving the dial slightly back so we're within the strict definition of jazz or contemporary jazz, my second choice is the work of one of the UK's brightest talents, although he has been stolen from the UK scene and is really at the heart of the New York scene at the moment. He is the pianist and composer John Escrete. He's also part of a really brilliant set of musicians, including David Binney and Ambrose Akamazure, Wayne Krantz, just to name a few. And his latest record is The Age We Live In. It's actually his third album as a leader, and for someone still in his 20s, shows incredible maturity. This track we're listening to is a joyous piece called Half Baked. It's a really perfect, balanced synthesis of Escrete's influences, which range from funk and jazz to choral music. And the whole album is a kind of effortless blend of these musical forms, along with outstanding playing by his band, which is a sort of a dream team. It's David Binney on alto sax, Wayne Krantz on guitars, and Marcus Gilmore on drums. And John Escrete, I have to say, is probably one of my hot tickets for the London Jazz Festival, as he plays a solo set on the bill with Henry Threadgill's Zooid. Not a gig to miss. I'll definitely be there. Another Jazz by Association favourite this year is, again from the UK, Adam Waldman's Kairos Quartet. They're a kind of supergroup of the young British jazz scene here, with Ivan Eam on keys, Jasper Hoiby on bass, John Scott on drums, and Waldman is the band leader and composer. Now, I have to be honest and say that in contemporary jazz, The one area I always find very weak would be the kind of vocal tradition, the song. More often, singers in the contemporary scene are still very much in hock to the great, great singers, Billie Holiday or Ella Fitzgerald. So few singers really grab me in the contemporary tradition. However, this latest record, the Kairos Quartet, has what I think is a killer song. It's called Maybe Next Year. It has a beautifully judged vocal from a young Swedish singer based here in the UK called Amelia Martinsson. It's a real tearjerker, a brilliant tune, and Wallman's backing is as fine as you get, really, on a vocal track in contemporary jazz. And the Kairos Quartet are really starting to make waves in the UK and beyond the jazz scene. They bagged an extremely well-deserved MOBO award recently, and I note that they are featured on the How I Wrote video series on The Guardian. So, a really brilliant young band, and I recommend that everyone checks them out. Even if today was given back, tomorrow's on his way to take it back. Jazz by Association, the radio show I present, has a kind of small bias in that I try to track as much contemporary French jazz music as I can as I broadcast on French Radio London. But my standout recording from across the channel at the moment is by the pianist and composer Baptiste Trottignon. He's built a considerable reputation in France and beyond on his solo playing and recording, but Trottignon sparkles in a bigger setting. This is a track from his live album from last year titled Sweet, alongside blue chip players such as Mark Turner on tenor sax and Eric Harland on drums. This is Sweet Part 1. It's a really brilliant live album. It's bristling with energy and it's steeped in the best jazz piano and quartet playing. It's a really outstanding record and I highly recommend everyone checks it out. But we've just scraped the surface of what I try to cover on the show, so I hope I've piqued your interest and I hope you will join me on Saturdays at 11 p.m. on French Radio London for a little bit more from Jazz by Association.
Jason Phipps with some jazz recommendations there. Now, joining me in the studio is John Fordham, The Guardian's jazz critic, who's here to pick out some highlights from the London Jazz Festival, which starts this weekend. Hello, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. So the London Jazz Festival, big deal.
It is.
How long does it go on for?
It runs for 10 days.
Right.
It's nearly 300 gigs, and it's all over town.
I was going to say, it covers an enormous amount of ground, doesn't it? What are the things that you're recommending? What do you want to start off?
Well, I'm going to start, I think, with McCoy Tyner playing tomorrow night at the Barbican.
Mm-hmm.
McCoy was in John Coltrane's Great Quartet in the 1960s, legendary as the saying is, and they're actually doing a reprise of some Coltrane music from that time. Actually, the gentlest part of it, because...
So what stuff?
I mean, this is a ballad album that Coltrane made in 62, I think, mm-hmm. With a singer called Johnny Hartman, and a wonderful young New York singer called Jose James is going to take that part. And a saxophone player called Chris Potter, who, well, there's no such thing as a stand-in for John Coltrane, but Chris Potter gets closer than most of them could do.
This is a very common trend in rock music at the moment, bands, reuniting or whatever and playing a classic album in its entirety. Is this quite a common thing in jazz now?
Well, it does happen, yes. So there is an extra reason for this because Impulse Records, which Coltrane recorded for, is 50 years old.
Right.
They're playing it all over the shop, so it is a kind of birthday tribute thing to them, and it was a very influential label. I mean, in a way, it's not typical of this festival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an aspect of jazz that the fans do like, particularly the ones who are a little longer in the tooth. but it's not typical of a festival like this, which is very much about the music of now and music that's progressing and bringing together stuff from all kinds of different genres, as mm-hmm. I think you probably noticed when you came and sampled the jazz festival a couple of years ago.
I have been to the London Jazz Festival, yes, as a sort of a jazz virgin. I saw all sorts of different things there. It was really good, actually. It was really eye-opening. And some of it was like, you know, free to the degree of it sounded like people being pushed down a flight of stairs, playing while being pushed down a flight of stairs. And then there were other things like Brad Meldown, things like that, that were just, you know, lovely, sort of transcendent.
I think something very interesting happened to you in it, because you started off in the worst possible place, which was an audience of about eight people in a jazz
vortex,
club listening to a lot of plinky plonky things.
I did.
But you ended up hearing Evan Parker, who's one of the most adventurous and atonal saxophone players in Europe. And I seem to remember you writing
I really enjoyed it.
You could see what the point was.
It was unbelievably exciting, that Evan Parker. Because it's something that you never, you know, if you go to a lot of, if you go to, generally go to rock, pop gigs, you never see that kind of knife edge, spontaneous improvisation. There was always this sense of like, this could collapse at any minute. This could be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sure the guy, I'm not suggesting for a minute the guy didn't know what he was doing, but there was definite sense of kind of electricity in the air, and the notion of art being created directly in front of your eyes for that moment and only for that moment, I found really, really exciting.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what I love about it.
So what else have we got?
On Sunday, there's Steve Swallow, American electric bass player, who's playing with his life partner and musical partner, Carla Bley.
Mm-hmm.
Swallow is not only this absolutely beautiful kind of lissom sound he has on the electric bass, really sort of song-like sound, vocal-like sound, but he's also a terrific composer, so I'm really looking forward to that one.
Where's that?
That's at the Queen Elizabeth Hall,
okay.
And that's on Sunday. Later in the week, Richard Galliano, the accordion player, is playing a tribute to Nino Rota, the film composer. And that's very interesting, not only because the themes are wonderful, of course, from The Godfather and Amarcord and La Strada and so on, but he's put together this really interesting band, which includes the English saxophone player John Sermon, and a very interesting American trumpeter called Dave Douglas, who's worked with John Zorn and people like that. So it's a strange mixture of those very ghostly, kind of slightly malevolent themes.
Mm.
And it's certainly music that cruises in and out of all sorts of different jazz feels, including, you know, the Miles Davis band of the 60s or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's lots of different things for jazz listeners, but that's a gig that is absolutely classically a perfect one for people who are coming from some completely different angle.
Absolutely.
And we'll just enjoy those things.
There's something to hang on to there.
Absolutely.
That's immediately going to recognise. The accordion, is that a common instrument in jazz? That's
not very.
No,
not very.
I
mean, you know,
world.
The standard joke is a gentleman is someone who can play the accordion but doesn't. And and if you hear Galliano, that joke just passes into history.
Sure.
Because he, as much as he listened to French accordion players when he was growing up, he also listened to Clifford Brown, a wonderful jazz trumpeter of the 50s. So his phrasing is quite a lot taken from bebop and those idioms of that time. He's amazingly fast, he's amazingly melodic and incredibly thrilling to listen to, but he's also very sensitive and soulful too, so he's a wonderful combination. You don't know you're listening to the accordion.
That sounds absolutely wicked. I'm tempted.
Oh, well, I'd be interested to hear what you think.
These are the big gigs. What are
those? Yes, and another one actually,
okay.
Which I think would probably be very interesting from your angle, because I know you reviewed this band last year, and that's Jerry Dammers' Spatial AKA Orchestra. That again is bringing together all music from all different angles. You get the Batman theme in there and all kinds of stuff. But it was originally conceived as a tribute to Sun Ra, who was this kind of rather odd but very unusual composer of the 60s and 70s and so on. So that's a great one for me. Some of the smaller ones are very interesting too. And one of the great things about this festival is that it does bring together international stars of jazz and people who are on their way up. And the serious productions, the people who put this festival together, are very careful about taking care of that end of it and all the way through the year bringing on new players and getting involved in educational schemes and things like that. And one of the most interesting ones is in this building we're in at the moment, or next door to it, in King's Place on Saturday the 19th. And that's a band called Beats and Pieces. Its name, unfortunately, is the worst part of it, actually. But everything is dreadful, isn't it? But everything else about it is fantastic. And they're from Manchester, young band. And they draw on things from Radiohead, as a lot of jazz people do these days. And also on a mixture of what you might consider classic American composers' influences, like, you know, all the way back to Duke Ellington or Gil Evans, or those kinds of people who were huge influences in jazz composition in the past. But younger ones like Michael Gibson, Colin Townes from here, this is a generation of players who've grown up hearing the British jazz composers that came before them as much of a natural source of information as the previous generation would have done of Mingus or Ellington or whoever.
Wow.
So I think that's a sign of the internationalisation of jazz, if I can use that term.
Yeah.
And they're just drawing it from all over the world. And, of course, there is a whole folk element in jazz as well, the European things that have come up with the ECM label in recent years. all these things are available on this festival too. So anyone who thinks that, you know, there's an easy definition of jazz will certainly forget all about it when they
No, I mean, I can only echo that because I went into watching stuff at the London, really knowing very, very little about it. I mean, I wrote about this in the piece and I knew the jazz records that every rock critic knows, you know, I knew Love Supreme and I knew, you know, Kind of Blue and Bitches Brew and things like that. And it was infinite, apart from that one experience at the Vortex, it was infinitely more accessible than you would imagine. It was infinitely more exciting. It was kind of febrile, vital, you know, all the kind of things that you actually want rock music to be, and quite a lot of time it isn't. There was some things very edgy and exciting, just generally good. And then there was Brad Meldow, which was like a beautiful warm bath of sound. Anything else?
Well, the last night on the 20th, Sunday the 20th, is a real problem for all of us because some fantastic things all happen at the same time.
Oh,
unfortunately,
no.
I'm going to go and hear Hermeto Pascal, who's now 75, but he looks like the bloke who used to run on at the beginning of Monty Python. his hair at the front and his hair at the back come to pretty much the same position, about halfway down his knees, and he's a totally extraordinary person who plays just about every instrument. He was, I believe, legendary. I don't know whether he's allowed to do this anymore for all sorts of perfectly sound animal rights reasons, but I think he has been known to bring on live piglets on stage and give them a little squeeze. So these things have all been part of his repertoire. There's a thing on YouTube of him and his band underwater somewhere in a forest near Rio where you hear this kind of distant flute music, and then they come up out of the water playing flute. So he's coming with an Anglo-Brazilian big band on that Sunday. But also, unfortunately, on the same night, Bill Frisell brings his conception of a string quartet called the 858 Quartet. And and the other one, how could I possibly have forgotten? The other one is Ornette Coleman, who's returning to the Festival Hall, the scene of his colossal triumph in Meltdown in 2009. Now an elderly gentleman, but he certainly doesn't sound like it.
He doesn't sound like it at all. No, I saw some of that as well. I saw some stuff that he did. And he kept coming on as well, Ornette Coleman. He was, you know, not shy of getting on stage with other musicians and having a go. And that's brilliant. John, thank you very much. Thanks for your picks. As mentioned, the Jazz Festival starts on the 11th of November, runs until the 20th. All the details are at londonjazzfestival, all one word, .org.uk. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Go there. Blow your minds. That wraps it up for the programme today. Thanks to John, to Rebecca and Tim. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
as overjoyed as ever to be taking part.
Thanks.
We'll be back next week. Till then, thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.